Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Righteous Talk on Love and Relationships with Relationship Coach Derek Q. Sanders. Here we address real issues with meaningful content and open, honest dialogue between men and women, speaking from a place of truth and wholeness, which often does not reflect the lies that many of our experiences have told us or shown us. Thank you, Derek Sanders. Love is more, and we have yet more to experience. Let's talk.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Righteous Talk on Love and Relationships with your host, me, Derek Q. Sanders. Thanks again, everybody who will listen live and everybody who will hear the call or hear the show in the archives. First, let me tell you where you can find me on Facebook, on social media. You can find me daily on social media posting an original quote on love and relationships on Facebook at facebook.com/Derek Q. Sanders. That's D-E-R-E-K Q. Sanders. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and all of those, you can find me at Derek Q. Sanders. Again, it's D-E-R-E-K. Sorry, I'm trying to do two things at once. Make sure that you guys can hear me. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. Name is the same on all. It's at Derek Q. Sanders, D-E-R-E-K, Q. Sanders. Also on my website, that's www.DerekQSanders, D-E-R-E-K, Q. Sanders. I have a blog on my website and a few other things. You can find a link to my book, or actually both of my books. My first book is Ladies' Little Black Book, 21 Questions on Men, Love, and Relationships. And my most recent book is called Outdated, Rethinking How Men Date Women, where we just deal with dating, much of like what we do on the show. You can find me on all those places. And also, lastly, I'm a staff writer for Black and Married with Kids. You can find me twice a month. I write an article for Black and Married with Kids in the singles column. It's www.blackandmarriedwithkids.com, just like it sounds, Black and Married with Kids. Great site, a lot of resources for married folks, single folks, dating folks, the whole nine. They have a bunch of articles and materials to help, to inspire, to enrich, all of those things. All right, tonight, what we want to talk about is who taught you how to love. And what that's about, we just want to talk about love and our foundation for love. What things have taught us about love? Is it from our experience? Is it just from, just the different things that influence love? There's a bunch of different ideas about love, how we come about it. Cool. Thank you, Jennifer. I had to check to make sure you guys can hear me. My girlfriend just told me that you can. So good. She gets to hear me all the time. So thank you, honey. Where do we learn about love? There's a bunch of different ideas, ideologies, the whole nine. Love is something that just happens between two people. You don't choose who you love. You can't control love. All these different things. We want to look into some of those things. But the first thing is to get an understanding of what love is. And so what I did, I found something that gives 5 different theories, says, what is love? 5 theories on the greatest emotion of all. And I'll come back to that after we look at this. What is love was the most searched phrase on Google throughout 2012. Think about that. For the entire year of 2012, the phrase what is love was the most searched phrase on Google, according to the company. In an attempt to get to the bottom of the question once and for all, The Guardian has gathered writers from the fields of science, psychotherapy, literature, religion, and philosophy to give their definition of the much pondered word. All right, so I'm going to read through that just so we can get an idea, because in order to talk about love, what love is, we need to have some type of foundation or come to some type of understanding of what love is before we can talk about what we were taught about love or how we were influenced to believe or learn what love is. The very first one is the physicist. Love is chemistry. Biologically, love is a powerful neurological condition like hunger or thirst, only more permanent. Now, what in the world could be more permanent than hunger or thirst? We talk about love being blind or unconditional in the sense that we have no control over it. But then that is not so surprising since love is basically chemistry. While lust is a temporary passionate sexual desire involving the increased release of chemicals such as testosterone and estrogen, and true love or attachment and bonding, the brain can release a whole set of chemicals, pheromones, dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, and vasopressin. However, from an evolutionary perspective, love can be viewed as a survival tool, a mechanism we have evolved to promote long-term relationships, mutual defense, and parental support of children, and to promote feelings of safety and security. That's from Jim Al something, Khalili. He's a theoretical physicist and science writer. So he says love is chemistry, and we've heard that. The psychotherapist is next. She says love has many guises. Unlike us, the ancients did not lump all the various emotions that we label love under the one word. They had several variations, including philia, which they saw as a deep but usually non-sexual intimacy between close friends and family members, or as a deep bond forged by soldiers as they fought alongside each other in battle. Ludus describes a more playful affection found in fooling around or flirting. Pragma is the mature love that develops over a long period of time between long-term couples and involves actively practicing goodwill, commitment, compromise, and understanding. Agape is a more generalized love. It's not about exclusivity, but about love for all humanity. Philosia, if I'm saying that right, is self-love, which isn't as selfish as it sounds. As Aristotle discovered, and as any psychotherapist will tell you, in order to care for others, you need to be able to care about yourself. Last and probably least, even though it causes the most trouble, is Eros. Eros is about sexual passion and desire. Unless it morphs into philia and or pragma, Eros will burn itself out. Which is interesting, because if you think about it, Eros, which is where we get erotic from, is usually the love that we see the most presented. That's usually what we see the most presented in film, media, romance novels, the whole nine. That's what we see mainly as being representative of love. Okay, and lastly, she says, love is above all. Love is all of the above, but it's possibly unrealistic to expect to experience all 6 types with only one person. This is why family and community are important. And that's Philippa Perry, a psychotherapist and author of Couch Fiction. The third is the philosopher. This is the one I think I actually kind of agree with the most. The philosopher says, love is a passionate commitment. The answer remains elusive in part because love is not one thing. Love for parents, partners, children, country, neighbor, God, and so on, all have different qualities. Each has its variants: blind, one-sided, tragic, steadfast, fickle, reciprocated, misguided, unconditional. At its best, however, all love is a kind, passionate commitment that we nurture and develop, even though it usually arrives in our lives unbidden, which means we didn't ask it to come. That's why it is more than just a powerful feeling. Without the commitment, it is mere infatuation. Without the passion, it is mere dedication. Without nurturing, even the best can wither and die. Julian Baggini is a philosopher and writer. Next, and I actually liked him. I think I agree much more with him than the rest. Next, the romantic novelist. Love drives all great stories. What love is depends on where you are in relation to it. Securing it, it can feel as mundane and necessary as air. You exist within it almost unnoticing. Deprived of it, it can feel like an obsession, all-consuming, a physical pain. Love is the driver for all great stories, not just romantic love, but the love of parent for child, for family, for country. It is a point before consummation of it that fascinates. What separates you from love, the obstacles that stand in its way. It is usually at those points that love is everything. That's Jojo Moyes is a 2-time winner of the Romantic Novel of the Year Award. Okay, I just must say, I mean, I kind of take issue with that because he said what love is depends on where you are in relation to it. So that means that love does not have a objective meaning. It means it's relative. So depending on where you are, then that determines what love is. Okay. I say no. Lastly, the nun. Love is free yet binds us. Love is more easily experienced than defined. As a theological virtue by which we love God above all things and our neighbors as ourselves for his sake, it seems remote until we encounter it in flesh, so to say, in the life of another, in acts of kindness, generosity, and self-sacrifice. Love's the one thing that can never hurt anyone, although it may cost dearly. The paradox of love is that it is supremely free, yet attaches us with bonds stronger than death. It cannot be bought or sold. There is nothing it cannot face. Love is life's greatest blessing. That's Catherine Wyborn, a Benedictine nun. All right. The issue I took is that the very beginning of the that article, it says, what is love? 5 theories on the greatest emotion of all. Love is not an emotion. An emotion, that's a feeling. It's a feeling. That's what an emotion is. It's a feeling. We have no control over our feelings. We don't have any control of our feelings. And the interesting thing is, if we take that position, that belief that love is a feeling, then that means, you know, we don't have any control over that, because we don't control our feelings. What we do in relation to our feelings is we respond to them. We have no control over them. We respond to our feelings. And if you think about a man and woman, when they exchange their wedding vows and they set up the parameters, you know, they exchange their wedding vows and they make take their oath for their covenant. Think about what those vows say. They promise to God and to the other person to do certain things for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, for richer or for poor, and to death do us part. That's about love. They take an oath. They enter into a covenant on the basis of those things. If love was a feeling, nobody would be able to exchange vows, because no one can make a promise to feel a certain way. You can't make a promise to feel a certain way. What you can do is make promises to govern yourself a certain way, to behave a certain way. And I've said this before, and I'm sure I'll say it again, but an old wise man told me years ago, well, I should say older, that love is a behavior. And when you think about that and look at that in the context of wedding vows, when a man and woman say to each other that I promise to, when they make promises and they say for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, for richer or poor, forsaking all others and all those things, you can make those promises when you understand that it's behavior that you're talking about, because what they're saying is they're promising to maintain a certain behavior throughout their lives. That's what love is. Love is a behavior. And even when you think about it, which this is going to be the last piece I was going to talk about, but when you think about it from a scriptural standpoint, love is a command. We're told to love. If love is a feeling, you can't tell somebody to feel a certain way. You can't command a person to feel a certain way, because we don't have any control over our feelings. We only have control over how we respond to how we feel. So love cannot be a feeling, because we don't have control over feelings. We only have control over how we respond to feelings. All right. So when we talk about what love is a behavior. Love is how I act towards my girlfriend that I love. It's my behavior. That's what love is. I control that. She'll probably tell you sometimes I don't control that. but it's a behavior. So if we go with that understanding, we have a foundation. Love is a behavior. It's a certain behavior. You can tell a person love you based upon how they behave toward you, how they treat you. Those are indicators of how you love somebody. If you treat that person with honor, with dignity, with respect, or as the scripture talks about, being long-suffering, patient, kind, all those things, that's love. That's behavior that we're able to control. That's our understanding. That's our foundation. We'll talk about our definition of love. Now let's talk about what has taught us how to love, the things that have influenced how we love, or our idea of love. The first thing I want to talk about was the role of entertainment. And some people would say, you know, you think about television, you think about film, you think about media, those different things. Some people would say, oh, that stuff, it doesn't matter. You know, you listen to certain music and it might be saying crazy stuff about love, about relationships, things like that. Or you're watching stuff that's shows that depict love, that misrepresent love. And people say, well, it's just entertainment. And I don't know why it is. Anytime you put just before something, whatever comes after it, if it's something bad, love, it somehow negates that, not love, but just somehow offsets that. It deactivates whatever harm that that thing may have caused you. But we'll say, you know, that that's just, it's just entertainment, which means to say that it's not to be taken seriously. You know, it has no impact and it doesn't teach us anything. And I can prove that wrong very easily. Listen to this.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G. HIJKLMNOP QRSTUV WXYNZ. Now I know my ABC, 26 letters from A to Z.
All right. So, no, I'm not crazy. I played that for a reason. The reason I played that is because if we say, oh, that's just entertainment. But think about it. Here you have music. We learned our ABCs through what? Through music. Through music. From the time we were little kids, we learned, we had songs that was fashioned to teach us without us even realizing that we're being taught because we're busy having fun, being entertained. Being entertained. So to say or think that entertainment has no impact is ridiculous. Because music has always been used. Entertainment is as I've said before, and I'll say this again, I'm sure too, entertainment is the most subtle form of indoctrination. It is the easiest way to I don't even want to say share ideas. It's the easiest way, the most subtle way, to cause people to think a certain way. Because when you see things so many different, and then when you see things so many different times, it becomes normal. And not only that, but with entertainment, you have the ability to bypass people's logic and reason and just go like right into their conscious or subconscious. And you can implant ideas and things because for one, they're being entertained. They're not being analytical most of the time, especially people that say, oh, it's just entertainment. So anyway, the point of that is, if you think about from the time we were little kids, we learned how to do our ABCs, probably even learn how to count through music, nursery rhymes and things like that, which were designed to teach us without us realizing we're being taught. It made it easy to teach us because all we were doing was learning a fun song. So that's how entertainment impacts us. So what else or how else does entertainment teach us? I have another clip I want to play. And this one deals directly with love. And here's the other thing before I play the clip. What entertainment does, when we talk about music, different types of music evokes different types of responses from us emotionally. Certain music is played to cause us to react a certain way emotionally, and other music causes us to, I mean, for example, if you want somebody to feel sad, you play more slow, melancholy type music. If you want somebody to be, you know, to dance, you play more upbeat music. Sorry about that loud noise, folks. You play more upbeat music, more rhythmic stuff, maybe heavy drum and bass, things like that. If you want somebody to if you want them to be afraid, then you play, you know, scary music. And when I say scary music, it's like something already pops in our mind because we've already heard it. When something's about to come around a corner, somebody's about to get killed, ate by a vampire, werewolf, whatever, there's a certain type of music that's played, right? So music is very integral in evoking certain responses from us, all right? So here's another one. Listen to this one. This one teaches us something else about love. The last one just was just an example. The ABC is just an example of how entertainment teaches us. This deals specifically with love. So here, take a listen.
I thought you'd want to ride to the funeral.
I have a car coming, so.
Liv, So that's it? We're done?
I have your grandmother's ring. I kept it safe right here.
I've given you this ring twice. And both times you've given it back.
Edison.
Tell me you don't want to be married. Tell me that being a senator's wife is too much. Tell me that you don't want a family. Tell me why I've been wasting my time. Tell me something.
I'm sorry. Edison, I'm really sorry. I could marry you. I could be a senator's wife. I'd probably be happy. I could probably give all this up and live in a country house and have babies and be normal. I could. But I don't want to. I'm not built for it. I don't want normal and easy and simple. I want...
What? What? What do you want, Olivia?
I want painful, difficult, devastating, life-changing, extraordinary love. Don't you want that too?
Love is not supposed to be painful or devastating. Love isn't supposed to hurt, Liv.
Oh, my bad. Clip went off. Some of you probably saw that, and I'm not trying to pick on anybody's show. Of course, that was a scandal. But it was a scene that I thought was particularly good for this particular topic. Because I think it was a good example. Here, she talked about love, and she wanted painful love, life-changing painful love, which I'm sure that is life-changing, but I guess not life-changing in a way that most of us hopefully would want our lives changed. And the point in me playing that was to show. And that was just one. I could have gotten a lot of others. I thought about playing a song that talked about how I learned. The singer talked about how he learned about love in the back of his car. But it's these things. It's these images, and you all only heard it if you could actually have seen the actual clip, which like I said, some of you actually probably saw that that particular episode. But you know, you can see the passion, the emotion, where she's actually saying she doesn't want what she called easy. What she called easy was being this guy's wife, coming home and not having to deal with a bunch of drama and foolishness. But she wanted painful. She wanted to be in the relationship she's in, where she's an adulteress with another woman's husband that she can't fully have. Crazy stuff. And this is the type of stuff that that we see regularly on television. And my point is not to specifically talk about that, but just to talk about entertainment and its influence on us, because this is the number one show, at least it was, till Empire came out. With some of its things, but the point is to talk about how entertainment teaches us about love. And unfortunately, there's not too many shows or not too many examples where we see love and it's actually a good representation of love. We see distortions. We see stuff like that where it's made, where pain is made to look desirable. We have a beautiful woman saying that she wants to be in pain, and this is what love is. Can you imagine how many people who are in crazy relationships where they're experiencing pain and those different types of things, where they're saying, okay, this is what I want? Because that's what you're seeing. That's what you've been indoctrinated to believe. So entertainment also teaches us about love. It also impacts how we feel about love. Here you have a high-powered black woman, beautiful black woman, high fashion, and she's saying, this is what love is. I was trying to find a clip from Being Mary Jane. With same type of stuff, we have another beautiful black woman in a very lofty position, you know, very successful. And what things, it shows about her and these relationships she has with these various men, none of which seem to represent love. One where she's with a guy or was with a guy who was married to somebody else. And she believes that he loves her, which is totally ridiculous because that's not love. When we talk about behavior, no, that's not love when you're in a covenant with somebody else and you're using two women, having sex with both of them, married to one of them. So that's entertainment and how entertainment influences us. Next, I want to talk about the home. What do we learn about love from home? Some of the people, a few people commented on, I posted a question on my Facebook page and some people commented on my page and actually some beautiful comments about how they learned about love. One lady talked about from watching her mother, you know, comb her sister's hair, work to feed them and all the different things her mom did. Her father wasn't there, but what her mom did to show love. So what do we learn from home? How does that teach us about love? And, you know, that greatly depends on what we see or what we saw in the home between our parents, if both parents were even there. We learn from the interactions of our parents. Their relationship represents what love should look like between a man and a woman. That's what we should see if they're both there. Now, in my case, both of my parents were home, but I didn't see a good representation of love. My parents didn't have a loving relationship. So, I mean, that impacts people different ways. So what I learned about love didn't come from what I saw at home because I didn't see a loving relationship at home. I went other places. I looked in, you know, what the Bible said about love. What did scripture teach about love? You know, I studied other things. And the other thing I thought about too, often girls confuse their relationship with their fathers with the relationship they're supposed to have with the man in their life. And you have the lady say that, you know, I want a man like my father. That's a different relationship. The relationship a girl has with her father is a parent-child relationship. And to want that in a relationship with the man in your life, that's confusing relationships. That's a parent-child relationship. The relationship, the example or the model for children is the model, the relationship they see modeled between mom and dad, between mother and father. That's the relationship that we're supposed to see how a man treats a woman, you know, how a woman interacts with her husband. That's the relationship we're supposed to look at, not the relationship between the son and his mother or the daughter and her father. Even though often that's what we have. I want a man like my father. Yeah, you want a man like your father. It's a different relationship because a man in your life is not going to treat you. I mean, it's different. He has expectations. Your father doesn't have any expectations of his daughter. He wants his daughter to be happy, just like he wants his son to be happy. He wants his kids to be protected. He wants his kids to grow up and be happy. He doesn't have any expectations from the, you know, from his kids for his own benefit. That's going to be different in a relationship between a man and a woman. Totally different relationship. So, but I wanted to play, just to break up the monotony a little bit. It's a little heavy. I wanted to play a poem. It was a really, really good poem that I found. I've never even heard of this guy before, but it's a love poem by Rudy Francisco. Check it out. Y'all ready?
Yeah. All
right, here we go. I want you to bite my lip until I can no longer speak. And then suck my ex-girlfriend's name out of my mouth just to make sure that she never comes up in our conversations. I'm gonna be honest. Yeah, I'm not really a love poet. In fact, every time I try to write about love, my hands cramp. Just to show me how painful love can be. Mm. And sometimes my pencils break. Just to prove to me that every now and then love takes a little more work than you planned. See, I heard that love is blind, so I write all my poems in Braille. And my poems are never actually finished because true love is endless. Mm. See, I've always believed that real love is kind of like a supermodel before she's airbrushed. It's pure and imperfect. Just the way that God intended.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. So I'm not a love poet. But if I was to wake up tomorrow morning and decide that I really wanted to write about love, I swear that my first poem, it would be about you. About how I love you the same way that I learned how to ride a bike. Scared. But reckless. With no training wheels or elbow pads so my scars can tell the story of how I fell for you. You see, I'm not really a love poet, but if I was, I'd write about how I see your face in every cloud and your reflection in every window. You see, I've written like a million poems, hoping that somehow, maybe someway, you'll jump out of the page and be closer to me, because if you were here right now, I would massage your back until your skin sings songs that your lips don't even know the words to. Until your heartbeat sounds like my last name and you smile like the Pacific Ocean, I want to drink the sunlight in your skin. Yo, if I was a love poet, I'd write about how you have the audacity to be beautiful, even on days when everything around you is ugly. You see, I'd write about your eyelashes and how they are like violin strings that play symphonies every time you blink. If I was a love poet, I'd write about how I melt in front of you like an ice sculpture every time I hear the vibration in your voice. And whenever I see a name on the caller ID, my heart, it plays hopscotch inside of my chest. Yo, it climbs onto my ribs like monkey bars, and I feel like a child all over again. I know this sounds strange, but every now and then, I pray that God somehow turns you back into one of my ribs just so I would never have to spend an entire day without you. But I swear, I'm not a love poet. But if I was to wake up tomorrow morning and decide that I really wanted to write about love, you're my first poem, it would be about you. And after all of that, she was like, "So how do you feel about me?" And I said, put it like this. I want to be your ex-boyfriend stuntman. I want to do everything that he never had the courage to do, like trust you,
I swear that when our lips touch, I can taste the next 60 years of my life. And some days I want to swallow stacks of your pictures just so you can be a part of me for a little bit longer. If I could, I would sample your smile, and then I would let my heartbeat do the bass line. We would create the greatest love song of all time whenever we stand next to each other. Love, I was the only one made for you, and you can be At Last by Etta James. I'll be Ooh Child when you're in pain, or you can be Candy Coated Drops of Rain, even though it never rains in Southern California. And together, we could be music. And when my friends ask if you're my girlfriend, I'll say no. She is my musician. And me, I'm her favorite song. What's going on? How y'all doing?
Yeah! How y'all like that? Wasn't that good? Love that. I stumbled on it up while I was trying to, while I was working on this show. But yeah, he said a lot of good things. Learned about love like riding a bike, and love is like a model before the airbrush. And it is. It's a lot. When we think about love, it's funny. It's when we think about love, we begin to have conversations about love. It's interesting the things that people say. You know, it's something that you can't describe, and then they begin to describe it. Or it's almost like love is something that we don't want to describe, because if we talk about it, if we give it a definition, if we define it, we somehow rob it of its mystique. We somehow suck the romance out of it if we talk about what it is. And unfortunately, it's unrealistic. If we can't talk about what love is, how do we love better without even understanding what love is? It's like we go through all these gyrations, all of this crazy stuff. And then again, we talk about, you can't define it, but then people begin to talk about what it is. Like somebody said, it's a strong emotion, which, you know, as I said earlier, it's not. It's not that. It's behavior. And you know, that doesn't sound, as they say, as sexy, which I hate, but I hate that term for everything. But we want to make everything we over romanticize stuff. When we look at love, love is not just what I feel about you, but it's how I treat you. I can say, you know, we say all these lofty things about how we feel about another person, especially early on, you know, when, as my mom would say, when all new brooms sweep good. But love is how I treat you when I'm mad at you, when I'm not really liking you right now, and you're not liking me right now. And even beyond that, when we do like each other, when we're not, you know, when you're not looking at somebody like a piece of meat and you haven't eaten in 3 days and you just can't wait to get your hands on it. Love is behavior. Love is what we have after the aftermath, after all of the excitement. The novelty has become routine. The things that you were so excited about have become normal to you. You know, you're used to hearing the sound of that person's voice. You're used to having somebody that's interested in you because you've been together for a while. But love is still maintaining that. Love is, I don't need to go find somebody else new because I need to be stimulated differently than how you are. I need somebody else to excite me. And you don't excite me like you used to. And I just saw something else new and shiny that does. Love is, I don't need those things. Love is, I'm committed to you. I've made my commitment and I'm committed to you. But the other thing I wanted to talk about, the last thing was, what does our faith teach us about love? What does that teach us about love? What does the Bible teach us about love? What does it tell us that love is. And when you think about from a biblical standpoint, love is something that we're told to do. As I said earlier, so if you think about love being a feeling, you can't be told to feel a certain way. We're told to love. The scripture tells husbands specifically to love their wives. They're told, husbands, love your wives. If love was a feeling, an emotion, it wouldn't make sense to say that, because you can't tell a person to have an emotion. You can't tell a person to have a feeling. But it went on to say, husbands, love your wives like Christ loved the church and gave himself for it or for her. That's a command. There's an example set. Here's what Christ did. The church was his bride. He loved her this way. He died for her. Husbands, you're to behave the same way towards your wives. That's what the church taught us about love. It taught us that love is supposed to be unto death. Totally different than what we see in the culture, than what we're told by entertainment, you know, by music, by you know, the media. It's totally different, because love is presented as is presented mainly as eros, as I was talking earlier in the article where the lady mentioned about eros. It's presented as just from a sexual standpoint, from a selfish sexual standpoint. And that's how we've learned about love. We learned about love from all of these different things. We've learned about love from television, from the church, from seeing, you know, our parents or other adults, other people that we know that were in relationships. All of those different things have influenced us and have taught us what love is, even if nobody sat down and said, this is what love is. It taught us what love is, or impacted our, influenced us, because we saw a relationship between a man and a woman, and we saw how they interacted with one another. Or we saw in scripture, we read about characters in scripture, or people in scripture, David and Bathsheba, different ones, and Solomon and all the, or Solomon, I'm sorry, and Bathsheba, not David, and all those different women that he had. And you read about the, Ruth and Boaz, which is a favorite, because Boaz has become the archetype for a man, which is a whole other episode to be talked about. But all of those different things have taught us what love is, and we have to ask ourselves, when we look at our relationships, we have to ask, what have we really learned? What have we really learned about love? Have we learned from the right source? Have we learned the right things about love? And when we look at our relationships should tell us. Our relationships should be a reflection of what we have learned. Actually, our relationships are a reflection of what we have learned. Our relationships are a reflection of what we have learned. They're a reflection of the value that we see in ourselves, the value that we see in others as well. Our relationships reflect that. And if we have relationships, recurring relationships that are not good relationships, that are not healthy relationships, then we need to go back and take a second look about what we've been taught about love, and maybe rethink some things, like my book, Outdated, Rethinking How Men Date Women. While I'm on that note, that's a nice segue. Let me play this commercial for you guys for my book, and then I'll come back with my final thoughts.
If you're totally frustrated with the world of dating and want to finally have the relationship you know God wants you to have, then you should read a brand new book, Outdated, Rethinking How Men Date Women by famed relationship coach Derek Q. Sanders. Derek is well known as the pro-activist coach who doesn't pit men and women against each other, as is popular in network and broadcast media to ramp up ratings, but produces no solutions. Rather, he seeks to achieve harmony in what God ordained as the sacred institution of marriage for his children, the human family. In Derek's book, he shows you what to listen for and what the proper answer should be. Coming from a perspective of a God-fearing moral code, Derek speaks to women who don't want to be mistreated by men who are nowhere near being equally yoked. Therefore, Derek shows you how to have the courage and tenacity to stand up for what you value most highly, so that you can avoid the suffering that you would otherwise get set up for. Derek believes, and you might too, that casual dating is an oxymoron. There is nothing casual about opening yourself up to being loved and potentially hurt by exposing your emotions to a man you're establishing trust in. It's a willful act of vulnerability for a greater purpose than what would or should ever be called casual, and therefore must be treated accordingly. Don't sell yourself short. Falling for a man who isn't worth falling for is really setting yourself up for a fall. Read Derek's book today. You'll be amazed at the strength, comfort, and peace of mind you get from it. Purchase your copy at www.derekqsanders.com on the products page.
All right, people. There you have it. Outdated, Rethinking How Men Date Women. You can find that at my website, www.derekqsanders.com, DerekQSanders.com. Or you can take the shortcut and just Google it and find it on Amazon. It's less than $10. You can get it Kindle or paperback. All right. So, you know, my final thoughts, as we think about love, it's not something that just happens to us. Love is not a virus. It's not something that we catch. Like on television, she drops the book, you bend over to pick it up, and your eyes meet somewhere between you bending over and picking a book up and getting back up and lock eyes, and then that's love. That's not love. It might be a physical attraction. You see somebody who meets your standard of beauty and you're attracted to them because you like how they look. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what's most immediately accessible to us when we see each other. You see somebody and they fit whatever you like. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all, but that's not love. I'm excited because I like talking to you. That's not love either. Love is our behavior, how we behave towards one another. That's how people are able to stay together 24, 25 years, 30, 40 years, 50 years, weathering the storm through ups and downs, death, tragedy, triumph, victory, failure, wins, losses, all of those different things. That's love, where sometimes you feel... You know what I say, feelings are like sales prices. They're subject to change without notice. Sometimes you don't even know why you're feeling the way you're feeling. You got to stop and trace your thoughts back. Think about, wait a minute, what happened? That's not love. Love should be constant. I'm feeling a certain way about you right now because I don't like you. Maybe I had a bad day at work. You said something that set me off. I said something that set you off. That ain't got nothing to do with love. Love still maintains a certain behavior. I don't go out and act a fool because I'm mad at you. You don't go out and act a fool because you're mad at me. I don't cheat on you because you gained a couple of pounds or I'm losing my hair or something like that. And I'm saying that this superficial idea that we have about love, the stuff we see on television, where the woman's makeup is always right and the guy's always fit, or actually it's probably not even that with guys, because it's not that much of a burden on a guy to maintain a certain look. He just got to make a certain amount of money. So he's always got a good job, and she's all, her makeup is always right. Her hair's always, that's not real life. In real life, people have good jobs and then they lose them. You know, people look a certain way, they gain weight, they lose it, they gain it, they lose it. That's what happens in real life. There are different things that happen in our lives that cause our lives to change. Women have babies, or you go through things that happen in your life where you change, you age, different things happen. Love maintains that same behavior throughout. And depending on what you learned about love, if you, granted, you've actually learned what love is for real. Because when I should qualify that, because we ask, what have you learned about love? Some of the stuff we learned really was not love. Wasn't. It was, like I said, Hollywood. Hollywood is all about selling a product, making a bottom line. So some of the stuff they show is not real. Some of the stuff, they just corrupt people. Broken people that are telling stories from a broken place. Wounded people that are writing stories from their woundedness, or insecure people writing from their insecurity. People who have been hurt that are writing from their pain. And that's a lot of the stories that we see from people who are damaged, people who are not whole. And we're seeing this stuff and taking it in, because that's, you see a lot of it. So, but anyway, it's my final thoughts. Love is a behavior. And look over your lives and consider what it is you believe about love, what you've learned about love, and have what you learned. Or is it just your experiences? Because again, a lot of times it's based upon our experiences. And if our experiences weren't good, then our ideas about love, our beliefs about love aren't good. And actually, I might talk about this on another show. It just led me to think about this, which causes us to prepare ourselves for the worst in relationships, where we're positioning ourselves. You know, women are positioning themselves for the man that cheats, the man that won't commit. The guy's positioning himself for the gold digger or whatever. That's not how we should be positioning ourselves. We should be positioning ourselves for what we do want, for the person that we are looking for, the person that we're looking to love, and the person that we're looking to love us. That's who we should be positioning ourselves for. And anybody that does not meet that should be somebody that we shouldn't even spend any more time with. Once it's been identified that that's not who we've not, this is not the person I'm looking for. We need to be on our way. Not trying to figure out how to position or refashion this person into who we want, or thinking that this is what love is because we want the pain. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. So again, take some time and think about love. What it is, it's a behavior, and what you've experienced, what you want, and just, you know, do some real soul searching so that the next time you're in a relationship moving forward, that you're able to move into a relationship from a place of wholeness, understanding what love is, so you'll know what you should be looking for from yourself and from the other person. All right? That's all I have tonight. It's 8 o'clock. Thank you all for listening. Please subscribe, share with your friends, and we'll do it all over again next Tuesday, same time, same station. Derek Hugh Sanders. Find me on social media, facebook.com/Derek Hugh Sanders, my website, www.DerekHughSanders.com. My public figure page, Facebook.com/Righteous Men. Thank you again for tuning in. Everyone have a great night. Mm-hmm.